Hey guys, it's Leisha and Kenny here, and welcome to another episode of Not Me, Not Today podcast.
Hello, and hello to everyone, wherever you are in the world. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Did you enjoy Halloween?
I did, yeah. Halloween was good. Quieter than usual, but I enjoyed it. I've also been really busy at work, so sorry for the delay in episodes, you guys.
One person actually emailed in to ask if we're still podcasting.
I know. Sorry, I'm working full-time and I'm a vet nurse, so it can be hectic and not standard hours, but I'm doing the best I can. Did you have a good Halloween?
Well, it was the same as yours. Quiet, but good. I enjoyed the horror movie binges.
Me too.
The fireworks were good too.
They were. There seemed like there were so many more this year.
There were. It was like Apocalypse Now at one point. Oh, we had an email from a listener, Gretchen. Thank you so much for your email. We really appreciate that. It was cool to hear how you discovered the podcast and when you listened to it too. Keep the emails and messages coming, guys. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd also love to hear when you listen to the pod and what setting. NotMeNotTodayPodcast@gmail.com is the best way to get in touch.
Thanks, Gretchen.
I'm really happy to be back though, and looking forward to this week's episode. So, without further ado, Leisha, what's the story?
This week's story is Aaron Ralston. Many of you will have heard of this man. He's the guy who cut off his own arm whilst trapped in the canyon.
Oh, this is the story 127 Hours was based on with James Franco.
It is indeed. Only we're going to cover it in more detail and take a look at what has happened since. Also, I remember when I was a teenager and this happened. My friend Katie, her dad told us about this, and I almost couldn't believe it, but he showed us an article about it.
Oh, cool. Well, let's get right into this.
Aaron Ralston was born on October 27th, 1975, in Marion, Ohio, to Donna and Larry Ralston. He had one sister named Sonia. He lived in Marion until he was 12, when they packed up and moved to Denver, Colorado. He went to Cherry Creek High School. Also, since we know Colorado is a very outdoorsy place, he learned to ski, backpack, and really take an interest in outdoor activities and sports.
Oh, he's going to be one of those super clever outdoorsy people, isn't he?
Oh yeah. Aaron went on to go to college and got a degree majoring in mechanical engineering and French. Oh, with a minor in piano.
Oh, cool. A minor in piano. That's a little bit random, but go with your strengths, I guess. What college did he go to?
Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh.
Was he also involved in any sports in college?
Oh yes. He worked as a rafting guide during the summer as well. When Aaron left college, he got a job with Intel, working as a mechanical engineer in Albuquerque. But he didn't like that too much and found himself burnt out after just 5 years on the job.
Let me guess, during that time he did outdoor stuff and it set off a fire in him too big to contain?
Pretty much. He actually quit his job to climb a mountain called Denali, which, according to Google, is the highest peak in North America. He then moved to Aspen, Colorado, to fulfill the lifelong dream of climbing mountains and doing off-trail hikes. In Colorado, there are 59 mountains known as the 14ers.
The 14,000 feet high mountains, right?
Yep, that's what it means. But anyway, he wanted to do it alone, like some absolute nutter.
You see, most of these people we talk about were alone, doing things they wouldn't normally do. You're basically asking for trouble.
I concur. He also wanted to do it during the winter, which apparently hadn't been recorded before.
Oh gee, I wonder why. Honestly though, it does seem a bit reckless.
Aaron Ralston is the poster boy for reckless, and he would say it so himself. In his book, he covers a few failed adventures. One included a grade 5 avalanche he survived just a couple of months prior to that trip that made him famous.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, I was a little surprised too. He apparently had a few incidents, and the avalanche was just one of the more serious ones.
Did anyone die?
No, but apparently they all stopped talking to him afterwards because of how it all happened.
Do you have the details on that?
Some. According to a few different sources, Aaron led out his two climbing buddies on a climb that had an avalanche warning given on the day. Aaron ignored it and brought them out anyway. They triggered a grade 5 avalanche, and one of the climbing buddies, his name is Mark Beverly, was submerged under the snow for about 10 minutes, struggling to breathe. One of the friends digs out Aaron, and they both locate and dig out Mark.
Ah, okay, I get it. Something tells me this will be a Mauro Prosperi vibe in parts.
That outdoorsy bug?
The call of the wild.
You'd think that incident would stop him, but it didn't. It apparently sobered him a little.
Not enough, obviously.
No, clearly not. So then, on April 25th, 2003, Aaron decided to go canyoneering. Alone. Without telling anyone where he was going.
Of course.
He went to Blue John Canyon in Wayne County, Utah.
Utah's next to Colorado, right?
Yeah, it is. Interestingly, I tried to Google the distance between the canyon and Aspen, and Google told me it couldn't tell me the route, which may be because it's quite mountainous and there are possibly road closures from snow at this time of year.
But it wasn't snowing then?
Not in April anyway. So, since it was a long drive, he slept in his van the night before his adventure. Then at 9:15 a.m. the next morning, he decided to cycle into the canyon, locked his bike at the entrance and started his journey on foot. He'd cycled 15 miles to Blue John Canyon. Blue John Canyon itself is 11 miles long and as narrow as 3 feet in some places.
So this is April 26th now then?
Yes, April 26, 2003. He's now walking through the canyon, and pretty early on into this trip, the accident happens. He starts to descend, using the narrow walls of the canyon and wedged boulders to help with his descent. He comes across one that seems to shift slightly beneath his feet. He decides to use this boulder to slide off and drop onto the bumpy canyon walls and eventually slide to the ground beneath him. But as he slides off the wobbly boulder, it comes loose and starts to fall along with Aaron down the 3-foot-wide canyon walls.
I can't imagine that fear he felt, if he even had time to feel fear.
Well, it drops, and his main concern was actually his head. He initially put up his arms to protect it, but his left hand got smashed by the boulder, and as it left his left hand, it fell and crushed his lower right hand and arm. The boulder dragged his arm downwards until it was pinned between both the narrow canyon walls.
Oh my god, I feel claustrophobic just thinking about it, and I'm not usually claustrophobic.
It's horrible. Well, Aaron is now stuck, and his provisions were low.
Let me guess, also no phone?
No phone. Besides, if he did have one, it wouldn't have worked anyway, as the reception was pretty much non-existent. All he had was headphones and a Walkman, a head torch, a video camera, a digital camera, some water, and some squares of leftover chocolate, 2 burritos, and some basic climbing equipment like a few ropes.
And a penknife.
Oh yeah, and that multi-tool penknife, obviously. But he's alone in the canyon lands, deep away from sight, miles and miles away from a paved road. And he told absolutely no one where he was going.
I'm pretty sure that's rule 101.
Yeah, it is. He also wasn't due to be back at work for a few days, so it would probably be ages before anyone noticed.
How deep was it?
About 15 feet deep down a 3-foot-wide narrow canyon part.
Ooh.
I know this seems like something so small considering what he had to do, but he was stuck in a standing position. He couldn't sit or take the pressure off his legs.
That sounds horrible. I wonder what goes through your head when something like that happens.
I'm sure some level of panic and denial.
The denial probably stemming from the surreal experience of it all.
Exactly. So anyway, Aaron is now pinned, standing in this canyon, with his lower right arm crushed against the canyon wall by this boulder. And his left arm is free, but sore from the smashing injury it took just seconds prior to his predicament.
That is some predicament he's got himself in there.
It really is.
Do you bother shouting for help?
He actually discussed this very point. He limited himself to 1 shout per day, but only shouted for help on the first day. According to Aaron, he didn't like the way his voice sounded. It sounded scared and panicked.
Also, the echo must have been so off-putting.
Oh, very. So, his first instinct was to move the boulder. He then tried pushing it, smashing into it to try and get it to move. The pain was excruciating in his arm. It felt like fire, and he cursed at himself for about 45 minutes. Then slowly, the pain began to go away, and his hand became numb. Still, he tried to move the rock. When he couldn't push his way out, he took out his bottle of water and drank about a third of it. Then stopped himself as he had a realization.
You're going to be there for a while, buddy. Best start sipping on that water.
Exactly. He did go through the things he had with him and tried to use the ropes as a pulley system to shift the boulder.
I'd probably try the same.
You'd probably encounter the same problems. You can't get the ropes around the boulder, and you're pinned in close to the wall. Your good arm has limited strength, and you're also relying on the boulders above your head, not coming loose and making your situation worse, as you try to place the weight of this boulder upon them.
Also, you'll have to rely on your good arm being capable of having some strength to pull up the boulder, even just a few inches.
Exactly. He did, however, use them to make himself a seat to be able to take the weight off his legs and allow him to rest and tuck his head into his right arm and shoulder to try and sleep.
That must have been such a relief to be able to take the weight off your legs. I'm sure something as simple as that made such a huge difference to his whole situation and how he lived so long.
Oh, I'm sure it did. However, he was only able to rest like that for a few minutes at a time, because then he would get too cold and be shivering and needed to do something to generate heat and take his mind off of the cold and the situation he was in. Aaron realised he had to be rational about this. He went through his options. 1. Suicide. He ruled it out pretty quickly. 2. He was going to have to get his own way out. Chances are, no one was going to save him. 3. He was considering having to amputate his own arm. He really didn't want to have to do that one. 4. He was going to chip away at the boulder and free his arm.
I think I know what option he goes for.
Yes, but it wasn't his first choice. He ultimately went for chipping away at the boulder to free his hand. So, for hours and hours and hours, Aaron slowly chipped at the rock with his penknife blade. And as he did so, he nibbled on the burritos and sipped on the water. He also began to take pictures and videos in case anyone was to find his body.
They must be amazing to watch now.
I'm sure they are. He said that he has a few that he hasn't released to the general public yet because they were some of his most private moments and thoughts. They're too upsetting for his friends and family to watch. But anyway, I'll get back to those actual videos later.
As for the pictures, we'll have some of those pictures on our Facebook and Instagram, so head over to Not Me, Not Today podcast pages to see those. Just click on the link on the show notes and it'll take you straight to the page. Also, while you're there, we'd really appreciate a review.
Yes, please, guys. Anyway, he did think about amputating his arm early on, but actually doing it was a different story altogether. Nevertheless, though, he did think about what he would do if he were to do that. What would he use for a tourniquet? How would he escape if it did come free? How possible was that? He even videotaped his thought process and felt that it was suicide.
Not desperate enough at this point, then.
No, but it turns out to be a good thing later on. So, anyways, Aaron spent a couple of days chipping away at this rock, but even his left hand was starting to become more and more injured and would scrape off of the boulder and the canyon walls whilst he was chipping away at them. His hand was swollen and scuffed.
Your biggest fear at this point must be hurting your good arm.
It was to a degree, and the first night was hard for him. The temperatures dropped really low, but he made it through and it filled him with hope. He knew that he could do it again if he needed.
Oh, it will be needed.
Oh, it will. He spent the next day chipping away at it some more. He wanted to take a break from the chipping at the rock and knew that it was probably time to cut off his arm.
Well, surely it must be dead now, and I'm not so sure that releasing it would be such a great idea anymore. Those toxins could flood the rest of your body and possibly kill you, couldn't they?
I agree. So just before we get to the gross part, I want to say that during this time, Aaron began to suffer from not only dehydration, but also from sleep deprivation. So he began to almost hallucinate. He, like Yossi Ginsberg, would escape in his imagination.
Yeah, but Yossi Ginsberg had a little bit more than burritos and water to fuel his hallucinations. No naked cave women then this time?
No, I'm afraid not. But he would be in different places and be in nicer places than what was actually happening. On one of those nights, he considered suicide because of his circumstances, but he had a vision of a young boy. He saw himself as an older adult with just one arm and a little boy running up to him, calling him Daddy and asking him to play. It was that vision that was a turning point for Aaron, because that's when he accepted that he could cope with having just one arm, and he wanted a family, and he wanted the son that he'd envisioned.
Wow, the human mind is such an incredible thing. How it seems to be able to separate itself from the trauma. A few of our stories have actually had that so far.
It's really amazing. So, by Monday, his food was gone, and his water was down to the last couple of sips. He was now starting to save his urine, because he knew it was going to have to be an option. He was in a desperate situation.
Desperate times do call for desperate measures.
They do. And as it wore on to Tuesday, it became even more desperate. His arm was dead, and chipping away at the rock would do nothing for him anymore. In fact, it could be more dangerous. So he knew it was time to amputate his arm.
Oh, I bet his blade was dull.
Yes, it was. He tried to cut his arm, making various attempts, but was barely able to draw blood. It was like trying to cut himself with a spoon.
Oh, I guess it's all well and good cutting into dead flesh, but into healthy flesh, that would be much, much harder.
And it was. In a video he did, Aaron expressed his sadness and despair in waiting for so long to cut off his arm. Now he wasn't able to do so.
You'd almost be kicking yourself. He must be out of water by now as well.
He was, to both of those remarks. His water was gone, he was tired, alone and freezing. His body struggled to regulate its temperature, and he feared that he was going to die in there. The Wednesday night was the hardest. He'd been without water for 2 days, and knew either way, this would be his last night. He would either get out or die there. So, with his dull knife, he carved into the opposing wall his name, A-R-O-N, October 75 for his date of birth, and April 2003 for his date of death, then wrote R.I.P. It was a pretty dark time for him.
Is it still there?
Yes, it is, but I think he scratched part of it out.
Also, someone must have noticed he was missing by now, even if they didn't know where he was.
This is true. So his work was the first to notice and raise awareness. His roommates, once his boss was notified of his absence, were worried about him too.
It was Tuesday he was due back to work, wasn't it?
Yes. So his boss tried to get in touch with him, and he thought it was weird, but decided to give him a day. And when he didn't show up on the Wednesday, he went to Aaron's house, and his roommates hadn't seen him either.
So at this point, did anyone call the police?
Almost. They called his mother. Donna was beside herself with worry. She told him only recently to be more careful when he was doing these activities, and now he'd gone missing and no one knew where he was.
That mother's intuition must have been in overdrive.
It certainly was. She called the police and filed a missing persons report, but there wasn't much they could do as they didn't know where Aaron was. That was until they searched any credit card purchases, and his last one was in a shop. They were able to narrow it down in the area and search for his car. Aaron made a final video apologising and saying his last words to his family. He felt particularly guilty about missing his sister's wedding and there being a funeral before it.
That would certainly taint the feel of the day.
It would. Now we're going to get to the gory details, so here is your trigger warning. As Aaron was still chipping away at the boulder in vain, he not only made the large blade quite blunt, but the top of his hand and thumb poked out of the boulder. As he was chipping away at the rock around it, the blade nicked his thumb. It went into the top of his thumb and sliced a gash in the flesh, and some flesh came off on the blade.
Surely you can't feel that, though.
Doesn't feel a thing. Curious by it, he inserts the knife into the soft, supple flesh. He slides it into his thumb about half an inch. He described it as sticking the knife into a warm pad of butter.
Oh my God, no way.
Yes. When he removes the knife, it's followed by a hissing noise. The decomposition gases of the hand were escaping the hole he just made in his thumb.
That is so grim and gruesome.
Can you imagine that, though? Knowing something that is attached to your body is decomposing before your very eyes?
The panic would be immense.
He did start to panic. He's not made of stone. But he worked hard to subdue the panic after a few minutes of trying to pull his arm free.
As if that wasn't the first thing he tried when it happened.
True, but I think it was the repulsion of his decomposing arm that made him pull at it frantically.
Oh, can you imagine if it slipped off like a glove?
Oh, that would be heinous. It doesn't, as we know. So, what actually does happen is he has an epiphany. He is going to have to snap the bones in his arm. This would make cutting through his arm a lot easier. So, Aaron decided to do just that. He tried slamming his body again into the opposing wall and putting the force onto the bones near his wrist. He did it a few times, then decided to push up and the force downwards on his arm, attempting to almost jump up onto the boulder. It snapped. It made a giant crack that echoed through the canyon.
That noise would give you PTSD for sure.
It would have to. Not at that moment, though. He felt almost euphoric. The pain was intense, but the adrenaline coursing through his veins limited the amount of pain that he felt. He'd almost done it. He had just one more to snap. So he applied the opposing force. He began to sit and bend down to put the force downwards. It wasn't long before another loud crack echoed through the narrow canyon.
My wrists feel weak hearing that. I have this urge of fear in a crack in my wrists right now.
Mine too. I also feel that whenever I see orthopedic ops, I always need to like flex my knees and elbows. It just makes me so uncomfortable. I hate bones and bone injuries. That may also be because I've never broken a bone either, so I can only imagine what it's like.
Neither have I, but yeah, the thought is horrible.
It's getting more gruesome. So, both of the bones are now snapped, and he knew that it may be possible to saw through his flesh now.
Wait a second, did they snap in the same place?
Yeah, luckily enough they did.
That's so fortunate.
It really was. So then he takes out the penknife and gets out the large blade and tries to stick it into his arm. But it wouldn't really go in. So Aaron used the small blade, which was about 2 inches long. It was less blunt than the large blade, and he inserted it into his flesh.
But he used the tourniquet, right?
He actually initially forgot, but then he uses the insulated lining of his water bottle. He realised when he saw an artery.
Yeesh, that's a close one.
It really was. So, Aaron tourniquets his arm and starts to saw into it. He was bleeding down the wall, blood that is still there. Anyways, he cuts through muscle and arteries. He gets to tendons and his knife wasn't sharp enough to cut through it. So, Aaron uses the pliers part and rips it upwards and tears through the tendons.
Oh, this is so gruesome.
Isn't it though? The movie had me cringing. I can't imagine how horrific it was in real life.
That was really graphic, especially the nerve part.
Which I'm getting to now. So, after the arteries and tendons had been cut and the bones had been broken, the main part connecting him now was the nerve. He could see it. He knew it would be the most painful part. His knife brushed past it and the pain of burning radiated up his arm, past the tourniquet, and towards the shoulder. It was eye-watering. He knew it would have to be a swift, sharp, painful motion. He gave himself a moment to collect his thoughts and bravery. Then, in an upward motion, Aaron ran the blade up, grabbing the nerve, twisting and ripping it up until finally it was severed.
I don't know why, but my teeth are hurting now thinking about that. The pain.
Ugh. Aaron described it as a burning sensation that ripped up his arm, to his shoulder, and up his neck. It was the most pain he'd ever felt. He was almost done, though. with a few more cutting motions of the remaining flesh that attached him to his crushed hand, he fell backwards, finally released from his bouldering chain.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Thanks, trying to keep it light.
I don't know if that's possible.
Well, Aaron was filled with joy and elation when he fell back. He said he had the biggest smile on his face, realizing that he had done it. He was now free. He literally described it as the happiest moment of his life, which he knows is such a strange thing to say considering, but he said he never felt that level of euphoria and nothing will ever compare. However, this was said prior to him having children. I don't know if he feels the same way now.
Well, I guess it's a sense of accomplishment and hope and a possibility and freedom all at the same time.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, his ordeal wasn't over yet. Aaron now had to get back to civilization and get help. He knew he couldn't scale the 15-foot high walls and he knew he would have to stick to the bottom of the canyon, which would be longer and had a cliff at the end that he would have to rappel down.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Aaron keeps walking with no water, in his arm dribbling blood, determined to make it out alive. After hours of walking through the narrow and sharp tunnels and turns, he also had to avoid water hazards as pools of water deep down in the dark tunnels lurked, and it was really unclear as to how deep that they actually were. So, he finally comes across an opening with some light. He follows it to the edge of a cliff and a 65-foot drop. So Aaron secured himself to a rock, anchors his ropes to the rocks around there, and rappels downwards with only one arm.
Wow, that's actually mind-boggling.
Those were the exact words I would use.
It's like something from Mission Impossible.
It really is. Well, when he got to the bottom, there was a puddle in the sand, and in that puddle floated a dead raven. Nevertheless, Aaron drank from it.
I'm half expecting you to say that he ate the brains nowadays.
Not this time, but he did drink from the water. At first it was in small sips, but then eventually he found himself gulping it down and filling his water bottle.
If you're going to be there for another few days, that's a really bad idea, as you could catch something and not survive.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, he's going to have to hike for 7 miles to his car.
That would seem never-ending.
I'm sure it would. I'm sure it did. Then even when he got to his car, he was going to have to drive to a hospital, which was a couple of hours' drive away.
I mean, there's definitely a level of stupidity to this whole ordeal.
I agree. And so does Aaron, and basically everyone around him. Anyway, Aaron was tracking back to his car, still dehydrated, an amputated arm, and well, to be honest, the man hadn't slept in 6 days pretty much. He'd lost 45 pounds in those 6 days.
Wow, that's a lot. Well, at least 7 of that's your lower right arm.
Could be. He also lost 25% of his blood and was on the cusp of shock. So then, on his walk, he rounds a corner, and there is a family on holidays, out for a walk.
Oh my God, the relief. The hope.
Well, they were Dutch and he screamed for help. He told them that he just had to amputate his arm a few hours ago and he needed help and a helicopter. They didn't really have any food to give him, but they did have some water. All they had in terms of food was 2 Oreos.
I'm sure he was grateful for anything at that point.
He really was. But it's not an easily accessible place, so they were all going to have to hike out of there. And they walked for 2 more hours towards Aaron's car. As they got nearer to it, Aaron felt weak. He could see where he'd parked the car and the trail towards it, but it was almost too much. He began to feel weaker and fainter. But just then, Aaron heard chuttering sounds. It was a helicopter. The search helicopter his mother had called for him after they'd tracked his car. They met him at the same place at the same time. Aaron was rescued. He said it was a cliche, but he knew when he saw it he was saved. He even asked them for a ride and told them he'd just cut off his arm. That helicopter ride was a special one. He said the sight and feeling of relief made him get closure. He went to the hospital and they tried to reconstruct the end of his right arm. And afterwards, he was reunited with his mother.
Wow, can you imagine? I mean, it was stupid, but also brave, and he is the one that lost his arm. It didn't really endanger anyone else, even though it did cause heartache to his family.
True. Oh, also, before I forget, I want to touch back on why Aaron waiting to the last minute to cut off his arm was a good thing. So, the reason it was a good thing was because he was dehydrated, so it allowed his blood to clot faster as it was thicker, which stopped Aaron from bleeding out. Apparently, the medic said that any sooner and he would have bled to death, any later and he would have died from dehydration, starvation, ultimately exhaustion, as well as shock.
Oh wow, that's pretty amazing, that timing.
It really was. It took him 5 surgeries to reconstruct the end of his arm. From the brutal way the end of the nerve was cut, it caused pain to randomly flare up in his arm.
That would be my biggest fear if I was to lose a limb, that phantom limb pain.
I wonder if we have any listeners who've lost a limb and suffer from it. If any of you do, let me know what it's like. I'd really be interested to know if there's like any triggers that caused the pain or if it ever went away.
Yeah, me too. Did he get to attend his sister's wedding or was he in hospital recovering?
No, he was out and got to attend it. To be honest, he didn't spend much time recovering in hospital. It really wasn't long before he went back to his usual life of mountaineering. He set his sights back on the prize of conquering the 59-14ers in Colorado in winter, alone, and now this time, with one arm. Something he actually managed to accomplish, because the man is a freak, in a good way though.
That is wild.
Oh, actually, I want to tell you something about Aaron here, which we brought up in a future episode because I found an amazing link between some of our survivors. Aaron's favourite book was Into the Wild.
Which was made into a film, wasn't it?
Yes, based on the book written by John Craker, who will be featuring in one of our stories coming up. Those of you who are readers will probably already know why, and those of you who don't, you'll get to find out the cool link about these in the upcoming story soon. Anyway, Aaron adored that book and was inspired by it to keep pushing himself and wanting to constantly explore and push himself to the limits and have this journey of self-discovery in a way too.
Oh, I'm interested to find out now. Don't tell me till we record the next one. I want to be surprised.
I won't. Aaron, the absolute machine that he is, went on to conquer all of those mountains, but that didn't stop him. He refused to let a missing arm stop him from doing everything he loved so much and held so dear prior to him losing it. So, despite all of this, he went ice gorge climbing, which I didn't even know was a thing, let alone a voluntary thing. And he went canoeing and abseiling.
Was this like a prosthetic or a loose sleeve?
With a prosthetic. I mean, he doesn't wear it 100% of the time, but when he did these activities, he did. He even had some of them made to help with his activities.
That's so cool.
It really was. I'm pretty sure I saw one that looked like an ice pick, and there was another one that looked like a pincer.
Oh, I'm now picturing Buster from Arrested Development.
Not quite, although I can picture it too. Aaron is way more of a badass than Buster.
I'm not sure anyone could ever call Buster badass in any form of the word.
Probably not. Anyways, Aaron was back testing himself months after the accident. There's even a documentary he did about 6 months to a year after the incident, and he does the whole journey again through the canyon, retracing his steps with one arm, and it is craziness. I'll let you know where to find that at the end. One thing that did happen was he managed to get his arm back. It took a team of people to retrieve it, and he had it cremated. In the documentary, he came back to scatter the ashes at the site of where his arm was removed.
Wow, what a powerful statement that is to himself. What else happened after the incident?
So, here's what happened after the initial recovery. As I said, he tried to be outdoorsy again, pushing himself, but he also wrote a book called Between a Rock and a Hard Place, which was released in September 2004.
Such a great title.
Wasn't it? He went on to appear in many a TV show, including The Today Show, Good Morning America, Ellen DeGeneres, amongst many others. Everyone wanted to meet this man and hear his incredible story. The documentary was with Dateline, and he got a lot of press and media coverage. In between these interviews, he was climbing mountains in Argentina, Chile, and Colorado. And in 2005, he actually completed the 59-14ers in Colorado, in the snow and alone, like I said. It was a long journey, having started in 1997, and he finished it 8 years later.
Did he have any mental issues from this ordeal?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that, although it does appear that he seems to be less affected than some of our other survivors. He got depression and had a bit of a mental breakdown and a life shift in 2006 when a girlfriend broke up with him. It hit him hard. He had a realization that he'd been a bit hard and cold and less appreciative of his friends and family and what it meant to him. He also had been so focused on his incredible ordeal and how he was to overcome the challenges afterwards that he didn't stop and appreciate what love could do. And as strange as that sounds, Aaron realized that when he was in that canyon, it was his family and loved ones that gave him the strength to go on, not just his own willpower. But it was his will and his love for them. He wanted to have a son and fulfill the vision that had given him such hope before.
Oh, that's interesting. It sounds like the epiphany Mara Prosperi's wife wished he had.
Probably. Aaron met Jessica Trusty in 2007 and married her in August 2009. They had their first child in February 2010.
I hope it was a boy.
It was, and they named him Leo. The movie 127 Hours was released in 2010, and Aaron said it was the best film ever made, and so factually correct that it was almost like watching a documentary.
That's really good to know. Usually these things are so dramatised.
They are, aren't they? Aaron and Jessica Trusty divorced in 2012, but were apparently separated shortly after the birth of their son. Aaron met Tita Shannon on a flight in about 2010-2011. They were seated next to each other and hit it off right away. They welcomed a baby girl together in 2012.
Wow, that's some pretty tight timings.
They are. But according to Jessica, she said Tita wasn't the other woman, and they were done by the time that they'd met, as far as she knows. So, I think it's just a really big coincidence. This, however, does bring me to my next awkward turtle moment. So, in 2012, both Aaron and Tita were arrested on domestic assault charges and exposing a minor to a domestic assault. It apparently took place in front of their 9-week-old daughter. According to a few articles, they'd had an argument over Aaron's son, and Tita hit him in the back of his head a couple of times with her fists, and he pushed her as she left through the front door. Apparently, her mother was there, minding the baby, so the baby didn't see. Both were released and all charges dropped. However, Aaron's were dropped first.
That's rough.
Yeah, it is. His son is now about 10 years old and his daughter is about 8. Aaron still does public speaking and there are a few videos out there of him doing interviews and giving talks. You can catch most of them on YouTube. He had two movies made, 127 Hours with James Franco, which was released in 2010, and you can catch that on Netflix. And he also did a TV short called Alone in the Wild, Aaron Ralston, and you can catch that on Amazon Prime. The Dateline episode you can watch on wherever you watch Dateline or something else. I just watched it on YouTube in a 6-part series. It was an interesting watch. His book, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, can be found online and even on Audible. Well, 127 hours is anyway. He has spent the better part of his last 10 years doing outdoor excursions that make his heart happy, and public speaking and spending time with his children. He's come under a lot of criticism for his stupidity in acting, now thinking later nature, when caught up in the thrill of activities, but he has also garnered a lot of praise for his ability to stay calm and think and have willpower to survive.
Do you think he regrets it all?
He's openly said he doesn't. He's glad it happened and happier that he faced the challenge and came out the way it did, rather than never having faced it at all.
That is powerful. I guess it changed his life for the better.
Yeah. And that is all I have today in the story of Aaron Ralston, the man who cut off his own arm to save his life.
Well, that was great. I may rewatch the movie now. Anyway, guys, that's it for this week. You can check out the photos of Aaron and his arm on our Facebook and Instagram. Just click the links on the show notes. Please also leave us a review. And if you want to get in touch, just send us an email to notmenottodaypodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, stay alive.
Bye. Bye.
Not Me, Not Today podcast.